from summer vacation this week, and we've been telling summer vacation stories. George went yesterday. My turn is tomorrow. Today, it's Gordo telling us about his African safari.
I drew the short straw today.
I'm really anxious to hear about this trip.
You are?
Yes.
Well, I got to tell you, Africa has always meant magic to me. We've talked with Norm. Norm goes over there frequently. And I've always dreamed of those animals, that land, that cauldron of biodiversity, just all those. I mean, from this song to the movie Out of Africa to The Lion King, anything that just had a touch of that romantic continent, I consumed. I loved it. I read everything. I Teddy Roosevelt and Robert Ruark and all these writers who wrote about African safari. Capstick, Peter Hathaway Capstick. When I read Death in the Long Grass, I just thought that was the most amazing book ever. And it really got me charged up.
So big, so untamed. That yes. continent just seemed like such a mystery.
And as one writer said, I've always had vague plans of going, but never specifically taking off. I always kind of knew I wanted to do a safari at some point in my life, but never really made plans. Firm plans. Well, my brother's an avid outdoorsman, and he invited me last year to go hear Craig Boddington, who's another big writer that I've always read about guns and safari and that sort of thing. He invited me to go hear Craig Boddington talk about lion hunting.
Whoa.
At the Dallas Safari Club meeting. And so as I entered the convention hall and I'm like signing up, becoming a member, of the Dallas Safari Club, I hear a voice back behind me that says, guess they'll let anyone in here, making a joke. So I turn around and it's Tim Dankliff and Dave Folsom. Now, these are the two guys who produce Tracks Across Africa, one of the huge hunting shows, mm-hmm. safari hunting shows. That you see, and they're people don't realize this, but the hub of the Dallas safari business is right here. Of the safari business is right here in Dallas.
We really?
Have the, we have the Dallas Safari Club. We have the producers of these programs live here. It's just huge. We have the huge convention every year in January, the Dallas Safari Club convention at Dallas Convention Center. It's just huge. Huge here in Dallas.
Yeah, I didn't
and people wouldn't
that.
Know it if you're not in the... If you're not in that circle, mm-hmm. I guess you don't realize that. So then the convention time comes around, and we get to be friends with Tim and Dave and Richard Cheatham and all these guys. And I'm standing in a house here in Dallas after the Dallas Safari Convention, Safari Club Convention. I'm surrounded by Craig Boddington and all these PHs that I've seen on all these TV shows, and Ludo, who's the publisher of Sports Afield, and... all these, all of a sudden we're right in the middle of all this.
Mm-hmm.
And I turn to my brother and say, we've got to do this. Let's do this this year. We had plans of going together. And the PH that everyone recommended to us, PH being professional hunter, who lives over in Africa, he had an availability this year just as a fluke thing. Usually you have to book these things a couple years in advance, because they'll be filled up. He had an opening, which was exactly at the time when we usually take our vacation. The stars aligned, and I realize I'm not getting any younger. I want to go on safari when I'm young,
mm-hmm.
not when I'm the pot-bellied, gray-haired guy. Nothing wrong with that. Most of the guys who go are that. But I wanted to go while I was young, and so pulled the trigger on it and went and had the experience of my life.
I bet.
So you go, and it's a package deal where this guy gives you your hunt, he's your guide, and he gives you your place to stay and all that stuff.
Yeah, you stay on his land.
Mm-hmm.
So his area that he owns is 48,000 acres. I went to Namibia, wow. by the way. You can go to different countries, Botswana, and, some people hunt in South Africa on those... game ranches that are a little bit too small, but I liked this guy's place. He had 48,000 acres, only fenced on two sides, opened up on those other two sides to 1.2 million acres.
Wow.
So these are very free-roaming animals. And Namibia is a well-run country, it's not quite as wild-ass and unsettled as some other places. So it was perfect. This is exactly where I wanted to go.
And in that part of the country, or on that part of the continent... same animals that you kind of find just about everywhere, or is it do different regions specialize in different animals?
Yeah, different ones will have different animals. Like, we were not in lion country.
Mm-hmm.
Lions were further north because it used to be lion country, but cattle ranchers, they hate lions. They shot off all the lions, scared the lions away, because you just can't have cattle operations and lions in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that the first safari, and I went with my brother and I went, and we wanted to shoot plains games. We didn't want to do any dangerous game on the first one. And danger game hunts, I mean, there's a reason why it's fat white guys with gray hair hunting them. Because those are the guys who have lots of money. And hey, those hunts are very expensive. So I wanted to do plains game, and I wanted to get the typical ones, you know, kudu with the big spiral horns, or the oryx, the gemsbok, you know, that has the big spiky horns and everything. And you can see some of these photos. I posted a few on GordonKeith.com, and you can see some of the pictures from my trip to Africa. Just beautiful country. The animals, just beautiful. You know, it's a bittersweet deal. You're hunting these animals, but you want to be a responsible hunter, so you only shoot old bulls who have been kicked out of their breeding herd, who probably only have one season left in them, if even that, you know. They've done passing on their genetics, and now they face long, slow starvation.
How do you know they're old?
Your pH. Our pH is a guy named Dirk, and funny enough.
That's funny.
So he's a winner. But they can look at all this. I can't describe to you the experience. So you get up in the morning, and you're before the crack of dawn.
All right, now where are you sleeping? In a lodge?
You're in a tent.
You're in a tent the whole time.
Yeah.
Like, is your camp out tent or a little bit bigger than that?
No, it's bigger than that. I mean, they're nicer, heavy canvas tents. Mm-hmm. But you're in a tent.
And that was for about a week?
A week and a half, two weeks. And it's winter over there. So during the day, that winter thing really works out for you because the high is in the low 70s.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as that sun goes down, you're dropping to the low 30s. And you're sleeping in a tent. And it is cold. And one night, the wind was blowing so hard that tent was just breathing and just cackling. I mean, the whipping of that canvas. And so you couldn't sleep. And you know you have to wake up at 5 in the morning and get going hunting.
And you wonder if the lions are really that far north.
Right. And so then you get on the back of your Land Rover and you're patrolling, and that pH is sitting there beside you, and you got two trackers on the back, and their eyesight at spotting game marvels you and astounds you. And they'll sit there and say, okay, yeah, that's a gemsbok. He's young. He's only about 4. And meanwhile, you're looking around for where he's... He's right across the dry riverbed. You can't find the dry riverbed, okay? But these guys have spotted it, they've sexed it, and they've given you an age.
And so how... Did they ever tell you what would they use to determine the age? Is it the length of the horns or the...
Length of horns. They can tell by the grayness of the coat sometimes. A lot of times it is the horn length. They know everything.
Uh-huh.
They've seen these animals, and they can pick these animals out. I mean, I'm telling you, the kudu's called a gray ghost for a reason. It's hard to pick out, but these guys can find them spotted out there. As a matter of fact, one of the pictures I posted on GordonKeith.com, there's a young kudu that's right in the middle of the picture. And it's interesting to try to find it. You can only really see him because the goldenness of the sun came and reflected off his horns.
So if you didn't have these guys, would you have any chance of finding the game and then shooting the right game?
No, because, I mean, they find the right ones. They tell you, okay, this is a shooter. You can shoot this one. You know, because they carefully manage this. They don't want you taking ones that are still passing on their genetics and, you know, they manage the game, and because this game has value and people will pay for them, you know, that's what the game has just come up in quality and quantity so much, as opposed to the old days when if you didn't put a price tag on them and people didn't want to hunt them, then farmers just kill them all off. You know, they run them off because they have no habitat left anymore. Everybody's turning things into ranches, and anything that would kill, you know, like lions, look at that, they get shot off of that place.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so you hunt in the morning, and then you get on long stalks, and we had some great stalks. Long stalks on a hartebeest, you know, something like a hartebeest can see for forever. and the dang baboons that bitch you every single turn, because baboons have incredible eyesight, and they'll see you coming, and they'll start whooping and hollering, and you'll see a whole troop of them moving off, you know, 60, 70 of them running up the hill, running
the
up
baboons?
The mountain. The baboons.
Wow.
And they're yelling and screaming. Well, that spooks all the other game off that you're trying to hunt for.
How big are the baboons? Like King Kong size?
Well, the one that we made meet Jesus, he was pretty big.
What happened? He tried to attack
the baboon? And it's hard to... Yes. What? Baboons are a scourge. They serve no ecological purpose over there.
So you just started capping
them? All they
do
is tear crap up. I mean, everywhere in the camp, anything you put. You put out a rain gauge, you got to put razor wire around it. Because baboons are basically frat boys. They just want to tear crap up and screw.
They're worse than snow monkeys?
Yes. And so, I mean, if you can get a shot on, you know, one of these alpha males in the troop, then you do it. And we just got a lucky shot on one of them. He came right out to the watering hole while we were sitting there waiting for warthogs to come in. And my brother took him. And that thing dropped flat. He met Baboon Jesus. He met Baboon Jesus. But, so these are the ones that I got. First hunt out of the box. We get it. We were not a mile out of camp, and the PH, all of a sudden, you'll hear him snap. That means the Land Rover driver needs to stop, and he crouches down. So he's seen something, and there is a huge trophy eland, probably about 300 yards away. Gorgeous. Tufted on its head, long horns, you know, this bull eland. And so he unzips my gun, and we're off. And it takes a lot to get an eland down, because, I mean, those are the largest antelope. No, I didn't lovingly unzip my
pants. As soon as he unzipped it, did it go off, as is your usual routine?
1,800 pounds of this animal.
Whoa, 1,800 pounds?
Yes. And it takes a lot to bring down an eland, even with my big gun that I was using out there. And we had to we went after that thing. It was 2 miles. I mean, and you're going through camel thorn and sickle thorn and all this kind of stuff. You're just getting scratched as you're running through this stuff, trying to keep after this animal.
Wow.
How many shots to bring him down?
That guy took 4, but the fourth one was just an insurance shot after he was already down. Just to
his temple.
Scoreboard him a little bit.
Yeah, just to show him we could do it. Just show him we could put another round in him. And so I got an eland. That was a I think a 30. It was 37-inch eland with 3-inch bases. Kudu. The kudu I got, an old kudu, was 52-inch kudu, which is good. Had real deep curls. Do you know which one kudu are? They're the ones spiral horns, real beautiful. Had the chevron right across their nose.
What's the eland look like?
Blonde, Norwegian. Eland's huge. It's the largest antelope.
Is that big mama bear there? The going,
yeah,
the
I'm sitting
v,
there with
the
trackers.
Horns.
You can see those are the trackers there.
Quickly.
Did you make friends with the trackers?
Yeah, they were great. There's an old man named David and his son, Zachy, and they were our main trackers. And David was so old, he doesn't get down off the Land Rover anymore, but his eyesight's still unbelievable, finding stuff.
All right, I'll tell you what. Let's take a quick break, because I've got tons of questions for you, and I want to find out what else you shot.
Yes, and I'll tell you how we almost died next.
Whoa.
The Unticket.
His African safari.
Yeah, you know, it's every guy has like a dream trip, and this was certainly my dream trip. And I may be paying it off till I'm 80 or something like that. Mm-hmm. Whatever your dream trip is, you may be paying it off till you're 80, but isn't it worth it to go when you're young?
Yes.
Sure. You finagle it. Hey, look, we all go into debt. Why not go into debt for the things you love? And they say you should spend money on experiences, not possessions.
I would agree with that.
And this is a good example of that. I, at the time of my life, went with my brother, and seeing that land and seeing that golden light come down when you're having you're getting one of them sundowners by the fire pit. Man,
pretty
you felt
cool.
Like you were living.
Yeah.
Now, we did have, we ran into, and just seeing the wildlife, not just shooting. I realize hunting is a very divisive issue. And some people have no concept of why would a human being ever kill an animal. With a gun, or perhaps with a pneumatic spike, the way we do in slaughterhouses. Whatever reason, they don't think we should kill animals. I get that. That's a different discussion for another time. But just going to the continent and seeing the animals, unbelievable because you not only saw the traditional ones, you know, kudu, gemsbok, eland, but you see odd things. You see mongoose, and you see the secretary birds, and you see, you know, we saw an art wolf, which is very rare to actually see over there. And seeing those was amazing. Well, we're coming back into camp after, I believe, the second day of hunting. We're coming in for lunch. We're coming after the morning. And we're in the Land Rover, and we're bouncing along these rocky roads, and some of them can barely even be called roads. And all of a sudden, there's some talk among the trackers standing back behind us. And so the PH, the professional hunter, he turns to them and asks, "What?" And they're speaking in Afrikaans. And so he orders the Land Rover to stop. And there's all this commotion going on, and the professional hunter, he unzips my brother's rifle and says...
Did you wish he would have unzipped yours?
What? The pants?
No, your rifle.
Oh, no, my brother's was on top, and oh, okay. That was fine with me. But he goes, "You may need to shoot this thing." And we say, "What is it?" He goes, "Black Mamba just went into that bush."
Wow. Fast-moving.
Now, Black Mamba is the second largest venomous snake in the world, next to the King Cobra. They can get up to, like, 14 feet long. These things can go 15 miles an hour. And they're the ones who do that freaky thing of half their body can be on the ground and the other half is sticking up, so you have looks like a 6-foot thin person coming at you at an incredible rate of speed.
Wow.
How are you going to shoot that?
Well, we don't have shotguns. I mean, we have are our rifles. I mean, it would have to be just an incredibly lucky shot if the thing's sitting there coiled, you know, across the way. And we're not far from our, I mean, we are probably half a mile from our camp, and a Black Mamba's out there patrolling around.
Wow.
So the tracker gets off the back of the Land Rover, and he picks up some rocks, and he starts throwing it in the bushes, you know, throwing it at
that's gonna
far away, and then closer, and then closer, and closer. No, trying to scare him towards us so we can shoot at this thing. We see it.
No, thank you.
So we can find it. How creepy is that? So I loved it. I wanted to see a Black Mamba. Now, I didn't want to see it attaching itself to my cheek as I scream, and then the camera freezes, and that's the last shot of the film. I wanted to see a Black Mamba.
So nobody took a shot at it?
No, we never saw it.
Wow.
Now, we did run into a jackal, and that experience didn't work out well for the jackal. Because it appears up on this hill right as we're driving up. I mean, it's not more than 25 yards away, and it stops, and you know, these things always running away from you, but it stopped, and that was to its detriment. Apparently landowners don't like jackals very much there, and we got the kill order on that one. And my brother took a shot at that thing with that big 375 H&H, and there the jackal, whereas originally it was kind of in one piece, it wasn't so much in one piece.
Wow.
It was very disturbing.
So did you get anything that you're going to make a trophy out of?
Yeah, I'm going to do the kudu and the oryx. I'm going to do those in European mounts, and that's the style where it's just the skull with the horns that's on a plaque that hangs on the wall.
I'd do an American mount, but if you want to do European.
Okay, thanks. But now the eland was such a trophy eland. I mean, it had everything. It had the horns, it had the tuft, it had the coloring, it had the... it just was a great example of an eland. So I'm going to do a shoulder mount on that, and then that's going to hit you another God knows how
much
money.
That was my next question.
Oh. You talk about meter running, Giorgio.
Is that
you try
running?
Not to think about it. See, I had no intention of shooting an eland. But on the first morning out, when the PH says, "That's an incredible... You know, you have an opportunity of a lifetime here. Go after this one." So you go along with it, and you kind of get back to the lodge afterwards, and you're looking at that price list on that trophy field on that eland. And you're like, oh, my goodness. And another one that my brother had taken, an impala, and I kind of wanted one, but then I was like, you know, I don't want to shoot all the exact same things, you know. I have a little diversity here.
That impala have 20-inch blades?
Yes, it was rolling, man. It was probably about a 1983. And so I say, you know what? I'll shoot a water buck. I like the look of a water buck. I'm going to shoot one of those, you know. And so we go out and we hunt and we get a water buck, and it was a great hunt, great stalk, finding it. And then I get back and check that. And I thought that was one of the cheaper animals. That I didn't really check the list first.
Did you eat any of these?
Ate everything.
You can eat all that stuff.
Oh, my good. The best food I've ever had in my life.
Really?
We ate kudu. We ate impala.
They cooked it over the campfire every night?
Eland, springbok. Yeah. We cooked everything.
Make burgers out of it?
And that meat feeds, you know, all those local people there, you know. I mean, we ate some, but then obviously there's tons left over, and so they take all those meats, and they'll make, if they don't make, you know, some sort of cut from it, they'll make biltong, which is kind of like jerky and stuff. And so all these people there, you know, live off of that stuff. I mean, it's not wasted, and you're eating stuff that is not raised with hormones and antibiotics and runoff of pesticides and everything. It is the best food.
So that was the food of the region, basically. I was going to ask you what the food was like there, but it was everything you shot.
That's what you, yes. You kill your own food.
What do they fix with it, or are you just eating nothing but meat?
No, standard, you know, potatoes, broccoli, cauliflower, you know, squash, all that sort of thing, and incredible desserts. You're getting desserts of the region and all this. It was just a real, you know, it's an authentic experience, and I think that, you know, not to go on the long hunting diatribe, because I've written a whole piece about it. Maybe I'll post it again on GordonKeith.com, but there is something that is very meaningful to be eating what you've have actually done the horrific deed to, instead of living off of the fat of that horrific deed that you just hire a bunch of other people to do in some sort of ridiculous slaughterhouse, or the way we eat meat here in this country. And I understand you can't kill everything you eat. I know that.
Right.
But when I was sitting at that table that last night that we were in Africa, and they had family in from Cape Town, and so there were about 15 of us there, and we're all eating that eland that I shot, and I'm seeing that it's feeding all these people, and you've seen that whole process. I think that that's meaningful.
And the people there were great?
Wonderful people. Wonderful people. And these trackers that we had, you know, the black trackers that we had, that is like a real honor and an incredible job for them to have, because a lot of people were very, very poor, as you can imagine, in that country. And so they, I mean, that is an honor for them to be able to not only have that job, because they get paid a good wage, but they also get, you know, lots of meat for their family.
Did you see a giraffe?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can see them in the pictures that I posted.
That's what I thought. Did you fire at them?
No. No, they were running up ahead of us. There's a few animals that I get so squeamish about.
Yeah, I mean, that's the Toys R Us mascot. I mean, you can't...
Yeah, that's Jeffrey.
You can't knock down Jeffrey.
Oh, yeah. Giraffe, ostriches, all these things are just running wild out there in front of you. Cheetah? Yeah.
They attack people?
Cheetah? Nah, they won't attack people. I guess I don't think. Now, in our tents, what's interesting is every afternoon before the sun goes down, there'll be a guy that works at the camp, and he will rake all the sand around your tent. And then you wake up in the morning, you go out there, and as first light breaks, you look at all the things that have been walking around.
Wow.
Big footprint.
Oh, there were huge eland tracks around my tent. And you start, and anytime you start seeing a cat print somewhere in there, hey, you guys got a cat?
Wow.
You got a cat, don't you?
That's pretty crazy.
No, we don't have a cat.
Did you go through or into any towns in Namibia? That's where
Namibia.
Namibia?
Namibia. No, I mean, other than we flew into Windhoek, which is the capital city, but we got picked up there and then taken an hour and a half out to the actual camp where we hunted.
I was just wondering what the African cities are like outside of Johannesburg and Cape Town.
I think beaten.
Pretty beaten down?
Yeah. Yeah. Johannesburg's beaten down.
Is it really?
Yeah. I think Cape Town's pretty good, but Johannesburg is, man, stay in the nice sections.
And the travel down and back was quite lengthy?
Absolute beating. 28 hours to get from our safari camp to my home in Bedford.
But worth every minute of the beating, right?
Yes. Like any great experience, there's sacrifice involved.
Yeah.
Including sitting next to the guy for 10 hours who smelled like...
Including sitting next to the guy who got on our plane in Senegal that smelled like an elephant's rear. was worth it, every single second of it.
Man, it sounds like an awesome experience, one of those life experiences. Just yes. Greatness.
Hello?
I'm very envious. I've always wanted to go to Africa just to see it. Very, very cool to live vicariously through your experience.
And now I can finally put the gun to my head. Merry Christmas.
Hey, will you do it? And say, do it on the air.
No.
So we get a little ratings boost.
Oh, creep.
850 here on Sports Radio 1310 The Ticket. That's Gordo's Fantastic Voyage. We'll get